The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Also, prior to college, I was 15. It was the summer between my freshman and sophomore year of high school.
Yeah, I could never do this when I was 15. I barely raised my hand.
Yeah, I liked making people laugh. It was a way of getting attention in a good way, but also not in like the goody two shoes way that I feel like
it's more cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But without being like mean or anything. So. Right.
Yeah, not too mean.
Yeah. So.
But you're 15 now. So how do you write? Like, how do you write comedy? You're 15 years old. Do you remember?
So I had a couple of jokes about my family.
Right, of course.
And a couple of jokes about my cat. And I think I had a joke about self-checkouts, and that was about it. But so when I had first put it together, so I was making this audition tape for this event, trying to be like, I'm a stand-up comedian. I've never done it before. And so I made this audition tape. It was me doing my stand-up routine in my living room.
It was on video.
On video.
Right. Okay.
I invited three friends over that evening. They were my audience. My mom was behind the camera. And it went about as well as a 15-year-old doing stand-up for the first time in their living room in front of three friends and their mother. So that is to say, I did not actually get asked to be on this show.
You didn't get the job?
Oh, goodness, no.
Oh, okay.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work. And they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
My name is Molly Sperduto. I am a longtime performer and owner of Ginger Ninja Productions, a company that puts together stand-up comedy shows for all sorts of occasions. In doing so, I book the comedians, run sound and lighting when it's needed, and help with consultation during the planning process of the event.
All right, we are on the mic. I don't even know. Is that a term like in the production world? I
made
feel
like
up.
There's a different preposition for it, but I can't put a finger on it right now.
Yeah. Well, I like it. So I say it all the time. So thanks for coming on. I know we scheduled this a while ago and I'm excited to talk about the world of comedy. And people think I'm funny, but I don't think I'm funny. I think I'm a goofy kind of person. I could never stand up and like do a set. And you have to be a good writer, right? To really do comedy. It's not just like getting up and doing it off the top of your head. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, good. So why don't we, before we get into all the comedy stuff, why don't you tell me about your background, you know, where you went to school and we'll move up to how you kind of got into comedy. And then like we were talking about off the mic, like you know, when does comedy become a business when you want to be successful at it and its career and so forth and how you do it. So does that make all sense?
Certainly.
Okay, let's do it.
So for my background, I had always been into performing, even when I was as long as I could remember, even before I had a stage to do so, I'd just sing songs to family and friends.
Right.
I overshared in kindergarten when we were all trying to, like, you know, we had our little time in our boxes and wanted to show off to the class what we could do. So I sang See You in September in front of my class.
Okay.
And my teacher loved it. Other teachers, visiting teachers, would come into the classroom just to see me sing See You in September to them. I sang it at our kindergarten promotion on stage in front of everyone. So I was always a little show off.
And where was this? Where did you grow up?
In Brick Township. So down the shore.
Yeah. Ocean County, right? Brick is Ocean County?
Yes.
Got it.
So in doing that, I just always loved performing for people. And I got into stand-up along the way because I realized I liked making people laugh and I could combine that with performing. And
so you were always doing like theater in school and drama club and all stuff? Yeah.
And most of my teachers and directors of school plays and everyone, bless them, knew that I had a penchant for comedy. So whenever they cast me, they were nice enough to try to cast me in roles that allowed me to have put my comedic timing to use.
Good. Okay.
So when I went off to college, I went to Rutgers.
Okay.
And went for journalism and media studies in...
Makes sense.
Yeah. And in my mind, I was in it more for the media study side of it than the journalism side. I was looking at the types of careers that people had with that major, and a lot of them went into things like television production and, you know, film and whatnot, and that side of entertainment. And I thought I'd be able to carve that kind of a path for myself. I'd go to New York City, start in an entry-level position, work my way up the ladder. Also being in New York, so many entertainment opportunities and performing opportunities.
So like editing, writing, maybe directing, all that
exactly,
kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Behind the camera type of things.
Yeah. And I just, I figured I'd go in that direction and see where life took me.
Okay.
And it also helped that being on the New Brunswick campus, the Stress Factory was right down the street. So I always had a place to flex my stand-up comedy muscle.
Yeah, I've been there a couple of times. What's the owner's name? Gary something?
Vinny.
Vinny, right.
Vinny Brand.
Vinny Brand, right. Yeah, I met him.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's struggling during this whole time. It's crazy.
I can't imagine what everyone else is going through, especially people that own comedy clubs. Like someone like me that brings a show to you, I don't have the overhead of a building, electricity, things like that. But for a comedy club, goodness gracious.
Yeah. He's not filling seats and taking tickets. How does he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Craziness. Okay. Another show. So you were at Rutgers. You went to Rutgers.
Yeah. So I was able to work through my major. I was able to also keep up with doing stand-up. And it was nice to finally be on the stand-up side, at least, in an environment where I started running into other comedians on a regular basis. I did the open mic there every Wednesday night that I could make it.
Right.
And
you were like part of the community now. You're part of the business.
Yeah, more or less. And just getting to know other people in the business, it really taught me. It was my first experience learning the art of networking.
Right.
Because you'd get to know the other comedians there. One comedian that I met there ran his own comedy show at another bar a couple doors down the street. And he also got me involved in... There was a comedy subsection of Yahoo groups where they posted other available shows. And so I started looking at that as well.
Right. Because they're not going to find you. You've got to find the opportunities, right?
Exactly. So just getting to know people, getting to know who does what and making those connections, forging those relationships and finding opportunities that come from them. And that's also the business world as well, going to networking events.
Of course, yeah.
So
business development is what it is, right? If you're a performer of any kind or you need opportunities to perform. So do you remember the first time that you got behind a microphone? Were you, it was all written out, you're prepared? Or you just like, I'm just going to do this? Or
Oh, it was very prepared. So the first time I had gotten behind an actual microphone, I had already performed my stand-up routine several times, just not on that public a forum.
Right.
The first time that I was interested and put together my own stand-up routine was when I was looking in the newspaper for auditions, as you did back in the day. And
in person. Maybe someday we'll go back to in person.
So I was looking through the newspaper. I saw an advertisement for a first night event, one of those New Year's Eve type of variety shows.
Yeah.
And they were looking for all sorts of kind of more esoteric performers. So not the regular like singers. They're like, we're looking for jugglers and ventriloquists and fire twirlers.
Knife swallowers.
Yeah. And stand-up comedians. And
oh, okay. So, it's nice that you fit in that category.
Exactly. Well, I didn't at the time, but I was looking down the list of
I don't juggle.
For.
I don't swallow fire. I don't swallow knives. Oh, comedian. I'm a comedian.
Yeah. I wasn't at the time, but out of all the options, I was like, that was the one that I could at least pretend to be.
You're very daring. So I don't know. A lot of kids in college would just do this. I think people have the impression, like, if you get into stand-up comedy, and I know you do a lot of other things, we're going to talk about that stuff, but I think they think like you go to an open night mic night and you just stand up and make things up. But if you want to be successful, just like anything, you really need to do to prepare.
Yeah. And what a lot of people don't quite grasp, especially when a comedian is at their best, is that with stand up, it is constantly set up punchline, set up punchline, set up punchline. That is how you structure a joke. It's not just, I mean, there are actually, as time has gone on, there are subgenres of comedy that are storytelling specifically. And, you know, alt comedy and whatever else you want to go in with that. But with classic stand-up, you have a setup, you have a punchline. Even if it's not as blatantly obvious a setup punchline as why did the chicken cross the road to get to the other
side? Right, right. You're setting up the audience to laugh, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some people are like, oh, well, and such just, you know, goes on and tells stories. I'm like, yeah, but he has tags everywhere
structure
along the way.
For a reason. Yeah.
He
and
sets
he probably
up.
Tested it, right? And practiced it. And timing
absolutely.
Is everything. Yeah.
Absolutely. And especially a lot of people like to throw out the example of Robin Williams. And they're like, well, Robin Williams could not have possibly rehearsed beforehand. I would bet he did.
I'm sure he did a lot, or he did a lot of stuff, right? Going on stage, going whatever, practice.
Yeah, I know a gentleman that I know from church had gone to school with Robin Williams and was telling me stories about him and how he did religiously practice all the time. I'm like, you're preaching to the choir. I knew that. The people that I talked to in bars that are overzealous.
He's this brilliant guy and he could just go on Johnny Carson and just be funny.
Exactly.
That was a result of years and years of work. But so I think that's interesting. So you found like the first gig. Had you ever written any stand-up at that point?
Oh, no. And so this was actually also prior to college. I was 15. It was the summer between my freshman and sophomore year of high school.
Yeah, I could never do this when I was 15. I barely raised my hand.
Yeah, I liked making people laugh. It was a way of getting attention in a good way, but also not in like the goody two shoes way that I feel like
it's more cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But without being like mean or anything. So
Yeah, not too mean.
Yeah. So,
but you're 15 now. So how do you write comedy? You're 15 years old. Do you remember?
So I had a couple of jokes about my family.
Right, of course.
And a couple of jokes about my cat. And I think I had a joke about self-checkouts. And that was about it. But so when I had first put it together, so I was making this audition tape for this event.
Right.
Trying to be like, I'm a stand-up comedian. I've never done it before. And so I made this audition tape. It was me doing my stand-up routine in my living room.
So it was on video.
On video.
Right, okay.
I invited three friends over that evening. They were my audience. My mom was behind the camera. And it went about as well as a 15-year-old doing stand-up for the first time in their living room in front of three friends and their mother. So that is to say, I did not actually get asked to be on this show.
You didn't get the job?
Oh, goodness, no.
Oh, okay. But
I still absolutely loved it, though. I love the idea of writing and coming up with these jokes. I love the idea of performing. And while I didn't really find an opportunity to do so for maybe about a year or two after that, the first time I had actually performed on a stage, it was about a year after that. It was...
So still high school.
Yeah. It was my junior year of high school. My church was having a variety talent show.
Okay.
And so I decided that was a good venue for me to try stand-up. I was 100% clean at the time for obvious reasons.
Right.
And it was a good opportunity because I had been a part of, so the church was connected to the elementary school that I had gone to. And so I had been a part of the school. I had been a part of the church. I'd been a part of the community my entire life. This was a room full of people who knew me very well, wanted me to succeed, and were going to laugh at whatever I had to say, even if it wasn't funny. So it was a very supportive environment for my very first.
Right. So as opposed to some people are like more nervous in front of the people they know, you felt like, oh, well, these people all have my back. They're not going to throw tomatoes at me and eggs.
I was very nervous, but in retrospect, I had no reason to be. But I do very much remember being backstage just freaking out.
Yeah, that's what I would think I would be doing. I just...
Oh, yeah.
Public speaking is one thing. I get to talk whatever I'm talking about. But I mean, you're basically performing. It's all timing. And it's all, you know, one joke is like crickets. You're just like, forget everything. Right.
Yeah. And I definitely did the crutch thing where I got up and I was like, hey, so this is my first time doing stand up. Can you just clap for me now? So before you regret it, and then I'll just go and tell jokes. And, you know, I got my round of applause.
Right. And that's a good way to break the ice. Right. I mean, it makes you more comfortable and makes them laugh. And
yeah. And it got me the energy and the adrenaline that I needed to keep going.
That was smart. That was actually very smart. I think comedy is a lot of like momentum, right? Like if I'm sitting in the audience, if you got me laughing a little bit, I'll keep laughing at things, even if they're not as funny. But if you're not laughing, it's human nature, right? You just like, you fall apart. So
absolutely. And another thing too is you also feed off the energy of other people in the room too. And that's actually part of the reason why if you've ever been to a in-person comedy show especially at clubs and whatnot, if you ever feel like you're being crunched in like a sardine, that is incredibly intentional because if you've ever heard the phrase laughter is contagious, it's kind of literal in a sense where if someone's standing, you know, 10 feet away from you and they're laughing very, very hard at a joke that you think is mildly entertaining, that's the best that situation's ever going to get. Right. But if that person is shoulder to shoulder with you and you feel them shaking with laughter, you're going to laugh more just because of that.
Yeah. It's vibrational energy that's coming off of them. It's the same thing if it's the opposite of that, right?
Exactly.
So it not only helps the club because they're squeezing more people in, but it helps the comedians because they got a packed room.
Yeah. And then it helps the audience because if, you know, the energy
experience
is up.
Yeah.
They enjoy the show more. That energy feeds off the comedian. The comedian can feel a lot more comfortable and ultimately do a better job.
Right. Yeah. That's why these like Zoom events, I've been to a couple of Zoom comedy events. I think one that you did too.
Right.
And it's hard because you don't have any of that stuff. You sit next to your spouse. If she laughs, you know, so it's very difficult to connect with a room that you're not in.
Yeah, that's why on Zoom shows, we try so hard to encourage people to keep their cameras on, to stay unmuted. A lot of people can't, won't, or don't.
Right.
But if you try to put that encouragement out there, at least enough people will do so to be able to carry the energy forward a little bit. I've been lucky on most of the shows that I've been on that I've had that.
Participated.
Yeah.
And they have to agree to be actively participating. I did one where there was just a chat. But then the one comedian who was good and the other one who wasn't so good, the good one kind of followed the chat and made comments and was like, you know, whatever, and made it funny because you couldn't really follow the chat. You were too busy looking at that person.
Right,
it's a tough, I love live comedy. It's you know, it's crazy to go back to it. So, okay. So you're back in high school, you're at the church. You didn't tell a dirty joke. So that's good. And did it like bit you? I mean, at that point you're like, oh, I definitely love doing this. Not that, oh, you know, it's the only thing you're doing, but.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was kind of a gradual thing because I always liked doing it. I wasn't sure if I was going to actually make a career out of it. I just knew I didn't want to stop doing it in some capacity.
Right.
And I might take breaks for several weeks at a time, whereas there's some folks on in the comedy world that if you miss a day, what's wrong with you? Like grinding. They also live much closer to metropolitan areas where they could find an open mic to go to every night. Whereas
really like every night of the week, they're jumping on a mic somewhere.
Some of them go hard. Wow. Especially the closer you live to say like New York City,
right?
Where there's some
stuff
people
every
do,
night. You can always yeah. find something.
And some people will do multiple open mics in a night. Like they'll start at the 4 PM one and then go move on to the 6 PM yeah. and just on and on and on.
Yeah.
I've never been that way, but being where I am in not terribly close to any city, it would be difficult for me too. So right.
Plus you have other pursuits. I mean, you have a production company. You're looking to be on a different side of the business a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So the church doesn't count. So you were in front of all your, so when were you on a stage where there's total strangers in the audience? Maybe you knew a few people, but in a club, you remember?
That would probably have had to been my Stress Factory days when I started at Rutgers. Because in high school, I did like a couple of other things, like a couple of coffee house open mic nights or...
like local stuff down in Ocean County.
Yeah,
like people
a variety show at my high school.
Right, right.
People which was you. Similarly met like the church. But... by the time I had started doing open mics at the Stress Factory, I mean, any open mic is going to be hit or miss because it's mostly just a comedian performing in front of a bunch of other comedians who, even if they find a joke funny, they're going to look at it from a more analytical standpoint. So right. they might not actually laugh. They might just think, oh, that was pretty good.
Right. And right. They still think it's funny, but they don't laugh because it's a
exactly.
business. They're professional.
But at that point, I had had enough positive experiences to go off that even if I bit it on stage, I would know.
Yeah, this it wasn't isn't like the only... first time. This is yeah. never going to work. Yeah.
Totally. It's not the only outcome.
Right. Are college crowds difficult, more difficult than, or they're easier?
I feel like.
I'm thinking they're all drunk. So.
As a college student, it was probably easier to perform in front of a college crowd. I don't know if I could pass judgment on them right now.
Yeah, it's hard to relate to them, maybe.
I mean, sometimes I'll go back and do a show here and there in New Brunswick, and I still have a couple of Rutgers jokes in my repertoire that I could pull back up
yeah,
and still have them
do
be
that,
relevant.
Right? You're in New
yeah.
Brunswick. Right. Yeah. So we were talking before about like, is comedy a business or a profession? And you made a really good comment about why it should be a business if you're going to be successful, right?
Right. Because any performer, regardless of what you do, whether it's comedy or acting or, you know, fire spinning or juggling, it's not just you go on a stage, you perform, you get off. Because right. how do you get those performances? You right. market yourself. You network with other people. You maintain an online presence. So the people that actually succeed at this are the people that treat themselves as a business when they themselves are the commodity.
Right. Well, I mean, you also have money coming in, right? They're going to hopefully someday pay you
right.
to be funny. And then you get that money coming in. What do you do with that? You got to put that in a bank. You got to pay expenses. You got to pay taxes and all that type of stuff, right? They
exactly.
don't withhold. A lot of times they're probably just paying in cash. So
exactly.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Okay. So what did I want to ask you about? Oh, so let's talk about, you know, what you do, like your production company and, you know, how you've been building that business and all that type of stuff. Because it's not just stand-up comedy, right? You're doing all kinds of events now.
Right, right. And being a performer in stand-up, I had gotten into the business side of it by just coming to notice that a lot of the shows that I was performing on were being put together by my own peers in the business. And
got it.
I kind of liked that idea. The idea of kind of being in charge of things is along with also being able to perform.
Like putting the show together and promoting the show and all the, it's basically the creative side of it, right?
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
Yeah, okay.
Even when people ask me, what do you like doing better, performing or putting together shows? I can't pick because
it depends on the right.
There's such good points to both sides of it that I wouldn't be able to stop doing one for the other.
Luckily, you don't have to.
Exactly. So I put a couple of shows together in college, but I didn't start putting ones together regularly until a couple months after I graduated. I had stopped at a bar with a friend of mine late one night and we're the only two people there. We start chatting with the bartender. I throw out the, I'm a comedian brag, what have you. And of course he goes, oh, you're a comedian. Can you put shows together here? I'm like, yeah,
sure. Well, you always say yes, right?
I'll figure it out.
Right.
So I was putting them together and, it was on Sunday nights at 10 p.m. It was this dive bar on the outskirts of New Brunswick and it was a free show, but it was still my show, my first show that I still got to regularly.
You were booking
run.
People to come in?
Exactly.
Got it.
So
when you graduated, you didn't go get a job. You were like, okay, mom, I'm not getting a job. I'm going to do stand-up comedy and do this production stuff. She's like, great. I'm glad I paid all this money.
Funny you mentioned that. I graduated in 2008. So even if I wanted a job, no one wanted me.
Oh, yeah, perfect. The whole world was falling apart.
Yeah, and it was funny because it was just so funny to me because I was putting my resume out to any place that I would want to have me, and no one's responding back. Meanwhile, I land this, again, free show, but
yeah, a show nonetheless. Yeah, non-paying job. It's perfect.
Yeah, but I started promoting it, like, come to my Sunday night show at this place and, different comedians every week, blah, blah, blah. And people started reaching out to me going, oh, you put together shows? I didn't know that. We just opened a cafe. My brother has a restaurant. This guy down the street's looking for, and I realized there was a demand for this.
Yeah.
And I was in no place to figure out how to turn it into a full-time business at that time, because this was a decision I had just made.
It wasn't like you sat down, you wrote a business plan and you said, okay, this is how I'm going to do it.
Exactly. Right. So I had, so I switched gears a little bit. So instead of looking for a job in my field, I'm like, let me just get any job that frees up my nights.
Right. Maybe so you has can a book good... events and you can exactly. build that side of your business.
Yeah. If it gives me a paycheck, frees up my nights and maybe has a good benefits package because, everyone needs health insurance.
Well, there's your business plan. So your business plan was here. We get revenue by working during the day to support the business that we want to run at night.
Yeah.
You already knew the marketing side of it. You were doing that, right? Growing that stuff. I can't imagine the finances were too complicated, but maybe with the events.
Yeah. And I had I mean, I just kind of needed to figure out the logistics. Like, I didn't know the first thing about even starting a business. I had to go to the basics of what's an LLC, what's a self-proprietor.
Right. You didn't even have a name at that point, right?
No. So I had to go through from the very beginning trying to figure out how to make that happen.
Yes, and turn it into an entity of some sort, right? A lot of people don't do that. They just keep winging it and they're taking money in. They're not following any kind of rules. And next thing you know, they get a tax bill or something like that. They're like, what?
Yeah. And it was my mother who actually kind of pushed me into turning it into a business, mainly because one of the shows that I had acquired shortly after I'd started running the bar show was one that said, you know, feel free to charge admission at the door and you can keep that. We'll make money off food and drinks. And
like, oh, you can make money doing this?
Yeah. And it wasn't bringing me in a lot by any stretch of the matter, but the fact that it was bringing me any at all, my mom's like, you need to start a business so that the tax man doesn't come after you.
That's so what she said. That's
more or less. And yeah. In that voice too.
Mom's a comedian too. Yeah.
Not for nothing, but it was a very smart idea. So
liability issues, right? I mean, you had to get insurance, I guess, if you're putting these events on, right? I mean, who thinks about all this stuff?
Exactly. So that was a smart idea. I thank her for that because that did put me in the right direction with this. And
that was the name?
Ginger Ninja.
Because you're a redhead.
Yes.
Where's the ninja fit in?
So Ginger Ninja was like a nickname inside joke thing from years and years ago. And I actually learned through maybe a couple years ago that, and I don't know if it's actually true because, you know, I just read it on the internet once, but I heard that Ginger Ninja is a slang term for a redhead in Australia.
Oh,
again, okay. I don't know. I did not fact check that little tidbit, but I could see that being a true thing.
Why?
I don't know. It just seems like a very thing to do.
The ninja? I thought you were going to tell me it's a word for somebody in Japan that's Australia. Is that where ninjas come from, Australia?
I don't know. It seems like a very cheeky nickname for someone, and I feel like that.
So now you have to do like one of those 23andMe things or Ancestry.com and find out if you have any, you know, Australian anywhere in your tree, even the remotest piece.
Yeah.
To figure that out or develop an accent.
I am terrible at accents.
Yeah, I'm definitely not. So that's not part of your comedy, doing accents or impressions.
No.
Yeah. Okay, this is great though. So you formed the company. It doesn't matter what the reason is. Your mom pushed you to do it. So that's great. You had insurance now. You're doing these events. And take me along. So. Because you still have a day job and you do this at night or no?
So that was where I was at. So for about 6 years, I kind of did it that way.
That's 14 roughly, right? 2014, 2015, somewhere? Like
yeah, to 2000, right to 2015. So in doing that, I guess what happened was, so I was doing a lot of the smaller scale type of venues, coffee shops, bars, restaurants, that sort of thing.
Right.
And a lot of the mom and pop places that didn't really have much of a budget of their own. So I wasn't about to ask them for any unreasonable amount of money to have a budget to put together a show. So a lot of these were like the door deals of, oh, I'll charge money at the door and
maybe you'll make a little bit offset your expenses, right?
Yeah. And
were the performers doing it for free too? Cause they just wanted to get their name out there or no?
No, I would split whatever. I would take whatever we brought in at the door and kind of
give them half and yeah.
Yeah. And as such, the shows that I was putting together couldn't be guaranteed to be a professional show because comics that rely on that, comics where shows are their bread and butter every week, aren't going to want to come down to do a show where the pay is maybe gas money if we bring in enough people.
Right.
So, you know, I still tried to keep them keep the talent as good as I could make it. But when the onus is also on you to bring people in the door, it gets a little tricky because then sometimes you'll pick a couple of comics that, have the talent to keep the show moving along. And then one comic that might be new, but new means their friends and family haven't gotten sick of them yet. So they bring a small army into the show. So you get the audience in, you know?
Right, so it's kind of a little bit of a technique to
Yeah. And so I was doing shows like that for about 3 years straight, just because, not even because I tried to market myself, just because work kept falling into my lap.
People I heard you asking you.
Yeah. I heard you did the show over here. I have a coffee house. Come here. And just, and when my last venue that I had at the time cut ties with me, it was a restaurant that they were about to shut down and pursue other opportunities closer to them. I went, well, I could actually take it upon myself to chase down the next coffee house, or I could figure out how to actually step up and
like do bigger venues or do bigger events.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, so, if you're going to do it, it's probably the same effort, right? And you make less money. You might as well. It's got to be a point where it's not really much more effort than doing the one at the coffee shop. You're not doing it for MetLife Stadium. That obviously would be a bigger deal.
Right. So I had, I would say take a break, but I was still active in that. I wasn't actively pursuing shows or actively doing shows, but if you came to me and said, Molly, we need the show, you'd still get a show.
Yeah, you would do it.
I was otherwise kind of on the DL to figure out how to re-strategize and make this work better. And so that took a couple years longer than I planned, just because I got distracted along the way. That was around the time that I discovered voiceover work and a couple of other projects here and there. And so then finally I had enough of my stuff together that in early 2015, I had quit the day job and started doing this full time. And at that point I had been focused mostly on fundraisers. Uh-huh. It was
like charitable things, charitable events.
Yeah. It was easy. It was easy to find nonprofits. It's
They're always looking for people to events to bring their donors in, right?
Exactly. And the lists of them are a little bit easier to find and sort out online as far as like registries and things like that go than it is to do the equivalent with like corporate events or potential private parties.
Yeah, you can identify the marketplace pretty easily. They don't hide, and you know, you got to work your way into the corporation. It's easy to find the person who either runs events for the charity or runs the entire charity. They're looking for ways to raise money. Sure.
Precisely. Yeah. So I had started doing that and with the intention of then expanding to doing just as many corporate shows or figuring out how to do just as many private events. And I realized that I really liked working the nonprofits and the fundraisers to the point where when it came time for me to figure out how to expand, I figured I'd go geographically instead of trying to
stick with the charities.
Exactly.
Stick with the nonprofit route.
Exactly. I mean, I will still do a show for any occasion and have done a number of corporate shows.
But your marketing focus, the business development is in the nonprofit.
Exactly.
Arena. Yeah,
exactly.
So finding those people are easy. How do you find these comedians? I mean, besides people that are well known.
The comedians were also pretty easy with me as well, because just being a performer,
you're tied in.
Have a network of comics that I've just amassed from my own work in the business.
And you could just put it out and say, listen, I have an event on this date and I need, and then people would call you.
Exactly. Usually I kind of have some people in mind that I would want to book on an event. So I'll just reach out to them directly, but push comes to shove. If I went on Facebook right now and said, hey, I need three comedians for a show.
Yeah. Everyone's looking for work.
Would have 500 messages.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of people out there looking to do work. Right.
Exactly.
Especially nowadays. Oh God. Yeah. Oh, there's an event I could go to without a mask. So what was my question? I know what my question was. Clearly, just like any industry, right? There's things that people shouldn't be doing and people should be doing, right? So there's plenty of businesses that people go into, and since this is a business podcast, and they should evaluate, should I be doing this or not? And they don't. You know, they don't have the skills for it. They don't have the background for it. They don't have the context for it, right? So I'm sure there's plenty of people that are like, I could be a stand-up comedian, right? So we know that's not true. So What do you, this is your opinion, this is an opinion question, right?
Okay.
What is your opinion and your thoughts about, okay, how do I evaluate whether my family thinks I'm funny, right? That's how it always starts, right? You're very funny. How do you evaluate whether that's a good thing or bad thing, or it's right for you or not right for you in the business?
I don't think you can make a flash evaluation just based off that. If there's a person who a lot of folks think are fun, like if someone's saying, like, you know, my family thinks I'm funny,
give it a
try. It could go either way. It could go, exactly, give it a try. Because it could mean that they're just very good in a tight context where they can make very family-centric.
Can you hear me? I can't hear you all of a sudden. Uh-oh. Are you back?
Can you hear me?
Yep. Now some Zoom glitch.
Yeah.
It says my internet's unstable. That's great. Okay. I'm sorry. You were saying.
So.
Maybe you're funny around the dinner table. That doesn't mean you should be on a stage behind a mic.
Yeah. But at the same time, it could also mean maybe this person does have the ability to pick up on things around them, or has that maybe observational talent.
In terms of timing but you still have to be, I think, a good writer. I mean,
exactly.
Right. I mean, people can't write. It's hard to you can't wing it.
Yeah.
You gotta write good jokes.
So exactly. So for someone to come up and say, oh, my family thinks I'm funny, you can't really tell whether or not they'd be good at it until they try. It's like coming up and saying, am I a good golfer? Have you ever sold a club?
Yeah.
No. Right. Could I be a good golfer?
With practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. An okay golfer. Okay. So if somebody's interested in it, they really have to write some jokes, test them out, get in front of a mic, and then either flop or, see, I just think the whole thing would be too stressful for me. I would just be like, oh my God.
Yeah. Especially because in order to truly give stand-up a try, you have to actually get up in front of a public audience. It's not, I mean, garage bands have the luxury of being able to practice in a garage. Comedians have to practice in front of strangers.
Right.
You can't just tell your jokes in front of a mirror and say, I'm good to go, because you need the reaction. You need the energy to figure out what's working, what's not.
Right. And even your friends are not going to be that honest.
Most of the time now.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. All right. So if somebody's looking to get started, that's what they should do. I mean, I don't know. You can't find an open mic right now, right? So it's kind of hard time to do comedy.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are some out there. I have not actively looked. I know a lot of people are trying to make a lot of things happen on Zoom. I know that there are also a lot of, or at least more than there were before, socially distanced outdoor events.
Right,
I know
now it's getting warmer, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Is the Stress Factory doing things outside?
I have no idea.
Yeah. I used to get mailings from them. I get nothing now. So I was trying to get Vinny to come on my show. I was chasing him and chasing him. He said, yes, absolutely. And then of course the pandemic hit and the whole world went into tailspin.
Right, right.
So I haven't been able to get him on I haven't been able to get him on email, let alone come on the show. So if you know him, connect me with him. Maybe I can get him on to come on the show.
I might be able to. He tells a good story too. A friend of mine was putting a documentary together on comedy and was actually able to get him for an interview. So
yeah, let me know.
I'll ask around.
So tell me about your future plans. Like, what are you doing with the company? Where is it going? Where do you see things going? Especially in the light of what's happened.
So I don't know if I'm making too many drastic changes other than to keep doing what I'm doing, just do more of it. I think that the addition of this virtual aspect is a blessing in some ways, because there are some folks that I know that their biggest concern when it comes to putting their show together is having to turn people away because they sell out. If you can with the addition of a virtual aspect, you can turn it into a hybrid event.
Right.
You sell out the show. That doesn't matter, because now you can sell tickets to people who want to stream the show. And then there's no limit to the people you can bring into the door, the amount of money you can make.
Right. And if the comedian's in front of a live audience, it probably streams better. I mean, basically, it's like having a TV network, right?
Exactly.
Private TV network. Yeah, that makes sense. And then I guess I've seen them use Venmo and stuff for tipping the comedian, and people can, you know, who are virtual, just throw money on Venmo.
Yeah. And aside from that, one of the side projects that I've been working on in the pandemic that I've been thinking about for about 3 years and just kept putting off for whatever reason, trying to also put a supplementary online course together.
Yeah. For production people or for comedians?
For event management, for stand-up comedy, in the context of stand-up comedy shows. A big part of what I do, in addition to actually putting the show together, is helping people through the process. What's the best time of year to put a show together? How do we promote? What's the best way to set up a room? Things like that.
Yeah, the whole planning thing.
Exactly. So right. I'm moving at a snail's pace at it. So I'm probably going to be dropping sections in like George R. R. Martin periods of time where I wait for, 10 years before the next one comes out.
Well, it's actually a good time, right? There's no events now, right?
Right. I mean,
charities aren't doing anything in person yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I got a few things that I do, a local thing where I go and then we just start having a dinner, but they can only have like 12 people at the dinner. We used to have 40. So you got to sign up and then it fills up. You can't go, So yeah, the charities are not rushing to, and they got liability too. They don't want to bring all the donors back and have issues. So.
Right. Right.
Yeah. You'll be vaccinated.
Yeah. At this point. So the course is almost ready to at least launch the free trial portion of it. It's in kind of a beta testing right now, but hopefully I'll have that ready to go pretty soon.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. It'll be an online course, right?
Right.
Very good. All right. So Molly, I appreciate you spending all the time with me. And what's the best way for people to interact with you? I don't know, get on your mailing list so they can hear about the course, find your shows. What's the best way to do that?
So my website is gingerninjacomedy.com.
Easy to remember. We'll put in the show notes anyway.
There are ways that you can sign up for the mailing list there. I also have a link to my Facebook page there, but if you'd rather not go through my website, you can find me at Ginger Ninja Productions. The whole long name is Ginger Ninja Productions Comedy and Entertainment, but you type in Ginger Ninja Productions, you'll find me.
Okay. But the website's Ginger Ninja Comedy.
Correct.
Got it. Okay, good. And I thank you. Any last thoughts, words of wisdom, advice for people who are listening?
Nothing poignant.
you don't have a parting joke?
I should have prepared one.
Yeah, bears, a rabbi, and a priest walking into a bar or something like that?
My parting words are always prepare parting words.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, I appreciate it very much. And I'm sure I'll see you at our next networking event. So thank you very much, Molly.
Thank you, Mitch.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.